Hello and welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Once again, I don't have any emails to respond to. I will give you my email address again. It's commonlaw, one word, the number 7, letter B, at gmail.com. If you have something you'd like me to talk about, I would love to talk about it, but you need to send me an email. And today we're going to have a guest speaker who's in the studio with me here today. He was educated at Dollar for Dollar, the finest law school in the United States, the University of Idaho. He has a BA, a JD, and is a BMF besides, James McDonald of McDonald Law right here in Sandpoint, Idaho. James has a practice quite similar to mine, and most of us in North Idaho. We're all kind of jacks of all trade, but he does one particular area that I don't. He practices in bankruptcy law, and so today he's going to give you all kind of a basic primer on what is bankruptcy, what kinds of bankruptcy are there, what's it look like, when should you do it. He knows more what to talk about than I do, so I'll leave that to him. I was also fortunate enough to have James's father, Jim McDonald, as my professor of constitutional law at the University of Idaho, as well as probably the most interesting class I ever took, which was sports law. Really had no idea there was such an elaborate body of law behind professional sports. But mainly what I learned in sports law is that every point in sports law can be made by an example that somehow ends in the Dallas Cowboys winning. I mean, even if we're talking about baseball, somehow Dallas was going to win. So notwithstanding wanted to throw up in my mouth every time I heard the word Dallas Cowboys, I thought it was a really interesting course. So James is going to give you a bit of that on bankruptcy, and before we go to the break, I'm going to give you just some little points of law that I want to throw out there. One, sidewalks are sidewalks. They're not bike lanes. Stay off of the sidewalks if you're on your bike. Every year I watch some little old lady walk out of the Hallmark and almost get clocked by somebody riding their bike going 20 down the sidewalk. Also, if you're on a bike, you don't have the right of way with cars. If you, for example, if you approach a four-lane stop or four-way stop and there's no car, you don't have to stop. If there is a car, you have to act like a car and stop. And my other point that I want to make, just because it happened to me today, is you know that lane that's in between the two lanes, like maybe that one that runs between the corner of 5th and Cedar and the corner of Larch and 5th, you know, that middle lane? That's called a turn lane, folks. Not an acceleration lane, I wanna really get in the other lane, so I'm gonna park myself in the middle here and wait. What happens is I use, like you're supposed to, like a turn lane, then some joker who can't get all the way across pulls out and we almost go head on. The center lane is a turn lane and it's not an acceleration lane. And now with that little bit of undisguised road rage, we will head to the break and come back to learn about bankruptcy.
Have you visited Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grunberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
Does your car sit outside while your extra things live in your garage? Do you fight to find places for your treasures? Are you looking for ways to make a move less hectic? Consider Sandpoint Smart Storage. Secure storage units will conveniently house your goods until you need them. With great customer service, 24-hour Bluetooth access, and online renting, Sandpoint Smart Storage has the answer to your space needs. Call Sandpoint Smart Storage at 208-627-5577 or find us online at sandpointsmartstorage.com.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor & Sons Chevrolet serving the greater Sandpoint area. Over the last several months, it's been apparent that our in-stock inventory levels of new Chevrolet trucks has been less than average. Throughout these ebb and flow cycles, February is shaping up to be on the flow side. In the next 30 days, Taylor & Sons has over 15 new Chevrolet Silverado 1500 trucks set for arrival. These are the most popular configurations, including Trail Boss, 6.2-liter V8s, and the all-new inline 6-cylinder Duramax diesel now offered in our half-ton configurations. Since its inception in 2020, Taylor & Sons has sold more than our fair share of the new Duramax Silverado 1500s. This truck is EPA rated at 26 highway miles per gallon, and unlike its big brother available in the HD models, this Duramax does not carry the hefty price premium on the window sticker. All of our inbound Silverado 1500 inventory is available to view online at tschevy.com. There you will find multiple pictures, detailed descriptions, and clear transaction pricing for every vehicle in stock. For guest-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
Hi, this is Shane from North Auto Collision in Bonner's Ferry, here to talk to you today about aftermarket parts. Did you know that around 85% of all insurance estimates are written to include aftermarket parts on your car? Many of these parts are made in China. Not only do they fit poorly and offer minimal corrosion protection, but they can also void your warranty. Here at North Auto Collision, not only do we think this is wrong, but we're doing something about it. That's why we're proud to introduce our new comp program. Here's how it works. If your insurance company is only willing to pay for aftermarket parts, our comp program will cover the cost to use original manufacturer parts. If you drive a Ford, we're going to use Ford parts. If it's a Toyota, Toyota parts. You get the picture. So combined with the great quality and customer service you're already accustomed to at North Idaho Collision, our comp program is just another way we're looking out for you, this time in an unprecedented way. Some exclusions may apply, but not many. Remember, it's always your choice where you get your vehicle repaired. So tell your insurance company, I'm going to North Idaho Collision in Bonner's Ferry. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to serving you.
KSPT, KBFI, North Idaho's radio.
Hello again. Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Today in the studio, we have with us James McDonald of McDonald Law here in town. And I am going to turn over the mic now to James for him to talk to us about bankruptcy. James, take it away.
Well, I know this is a very riveting topic, and I'm sure people are really excited for this. Just a little background about myself. Art is right. I am a proud Vandal. I did graduate from what we call the Harvard of the Northwest about 16 years ago. After graduation, I moved up to Sandpoint, and I joined the Elsesser Jarzabek law firm, and I started practicing in bankruptcy right away. My senior partner was a standing Chapter 7 case trustee, so I started my legal career representing Chapter 7 trustee. Basically, that entailed litigating against misbehaving debtors, trying to find assets that debtors were hiding, or trying to take away their discharge. I also represented Chapter 11 liquidating trustees. I've done representations of state court receivers, which is in essence a state court bankruptcy trustee, has a lot of the same powers. But most of my practice for the last 16 years has been primarily representing just individual consumer debtors, just your normal mom and pops here in town. Mostly, over 90% of them would be Chapter 7 debtors. What I wanted to do today is just kind of give a little history of the Bankruptcy Act and how we got there, and then kind of a little nuts and bolts explain how bankruptcy law works. From my research, the bankruptcy laws first appeared in 1542 under Henry VIII. Back then, bankruptcy was considered a crime. They actually had debtors' prisons, and in extreme cases, they actually killed debtors. By the 18th century in England, they'd gotten a little more fair-minded and realized just being broke and not being able to pay your debts doesn't make you a bad person, doesn't make you a criminal, and they started allowing you to discharge your debts. Like you know, Art, all of our laws here in the U.S. come from England. We base our legal system off the English law. We borrowed heavily from that. And in the United States, the bankruptcy laws first started appearing at the early beginning of the 19th century. I think that's enough history, so let me tell you about the nuts and bolts of bankruptcy. For an individual debtor, there's four chapters you could file under. There's Chapter 7, which is a liquidation chapter, where basically, simplistically, a case trustee is appointed. He marshals all of your non-exempt assets and liquidates them to pay creditors the proverbial pennies on the dollar. That's primarily what you're going to see here in Bonner County and what most people are going to file under. An individual can also file under Chapter 11, rarely done. The last case I'm aware of an individual Chapter 11 here in Idaho was one of the Simplot kids. Chapter 11 is primarily designed for corporations to reorganize. So when people see that a company has filed bankruptcy, you know, they're reorganizing their financial affairs. They try to come up with a consensual plan with their creditors. The thought being creditors will do better if it's an ongoing business as opposed to a liquidating business. Some Chapter 11s fail and they do end up liquidating. Then the next chapter an individual debtor could file under would be a Chapter 12. This is a family farmer's chapter. So you have to have over 50% of your income from family farming or family fishing. That rarely happens here in North Idaho. In fact, I've never filed a Chapter 12. My former partner was a Chapter 12 trustee in the Eastern District of Washington, so I did do some representation over there, but I have never done one here in North Idaho. And then the final chapter, and this is the other chapter most individuals will use, would be a Chapter 13. A Chapter 13 is only for individuals. Corporations, LLCs, any business entity is not eligible to file a Chapter 13. A Chapter 13 is kind of like a mini scaled down Chapter 11. You keep all of your assets, they're not liquidated, but you come up with a plan of repayment. You don't pay your creditors in full, you pay them based on this best interest test. It's basically what you can afford. A Chapter 13 plan is going to be a 3 or 5 year plan. It's a 3 year plan if you're a below median income debtor and a 5 year if you're above median income debtor. So simplistically, let's say you make $5,000 a month. Your allowed bankruptcy expenses are $4,100 a month. You would pay $900 a month to the plan, which a Chapter 13 trustee would distribute out to creditors pro rata based on the size of their claim. And then assuming you completed all those plan payments at the end of 5 years, you'd get your discharge. Chapter 7 is a totally different animal. In Chapter 7, there isn't a plan. Everything is a liquidation. Now, Congress in 2005 completely amended the bankruptcy code. And one of the big changes was they came up with a means test. It's an income-based test. So your eligibility to file a Chapter 7 is based on your income. If you make more than the median income based on your household size and locality, it's presumed to be an abuse of the Chapter 7, and you have to do a Chapter 13 unless you can rebut that presumption. So bankruptcy is, you know, federal law, and we're supposed to have allegedly uniform bankruptcy laws, but what you find out is it really varies what state you are. For instance, in Idaho, the median income for a one-person household size is currently $51,837. Whereas if you were a debtor in California, it would be over $62,000 is the median income. And surprisingly to me, Washington is even higher at over $70,000 is the median income for a one-person household size. Then that goes up based on your household size. So if you're a four-person household in Idaho, the median income is a little over $89,000. So if you make anything less than $89,000, you're eligible to file a Chapter 7. Most of the people I come in contact with here in my practice in Sandpoint, it's not a problem. They're well below median income. There's another big difference between Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. A Chapter 7, you can be forced in. We have what we call a non-voluntary Chapter 7. So a creditor can put you in bankruptcy if you get three creditors and they have an aggregate claims over a certain threshold. They can force you into bankruptcy. Whereas in a Chapter 13, since it's a repayment plan and you're paying your income, it's completely voluntary. No creditors can force you into a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. So in all bankruptcies, and especially in Chapter 7, there's really two main goals that Congress and the Bankruptcy Code is trying to achieve with their bankruptcy policy. Bankruptcy, they say, is an equitable proceeding, so it's to give the honest but unfortunate debtor a fresh start, free and clear of the pre-bankruptcy debts. So the honest part is meaning you list all of your assets and you disclose all of your debts. On the creditor side of the equation, the idea is to treat all creditors equally. So that means that all creditors take a collective hit. Their debts are going to be discharged if there's no non-exempt assets, or they will collectively share in the proceeds from the liquidation of non-exempt assets by filing a proof of claim, and they get paid out pro rata based on their size of the claim and the amount of money available to pay creditors. So, who is a candidate for filing Chapter 7 bankruptcies? Well, what it's really designed to do is to get rid of unsecured debt. You know, the debt world is binary. We have your unsecured debt, meaning the creditor has no collateral. Your classic examples of that are going to be your credit card debt, your medical debt. Another one we see a lot of is if you have a deficiency from your vehicle being repossessed and then the creditor, you know, sold the vehicle at auction and didn't get made whole, and then they sue you for that deficiency. Then there's all kinds of other unsecured debts. You know, for instance, just signature loans, a lot of other things I can go into, but, you know, that's your sort of classic example. And that's what bankruptcy is really good, is somebody that has a lot of unsecured debt, no non-exempt assets, we can file a bankruptcy and get rid of all of those debts. The other side of the debt world is your secured debts. And here we're looking at your classic examples would be your mortgage, your car loans, your motor toy loans. Meaning the creditor is secured in the collateral. They provided that purchase money to get that collateral. So if you default on your home payments, you know, a creditor can foreclose on your home, sell it to make themselves whole. Same thing, you know, with cars and motor toys. If you default on your payments, eventually the bank's going to come pick up your stuff, go auction it off. Usually they won't be made whole, and they will sue you for that deficiency. So what happens when you file a bankruptcy and you have secured debt, like a home loan or a car loan or a motor toy loan? You have really two options. You can either surrender the collateral, what we like to say, hey, creditor, come eat steel, or eat wood if it's a car or a home, which really doesn't happen in today's market. But for instance, let's say you owe $30,000 on your truck. Now your truck's worth $10,000. So you're $20,000 underwater. So when you file bankruptcy, you know, it'd be a good idea to say, hey, creditor, come take the car back and I can discharge that $20,000 I'm underwater. That would be the smart thing to do. Because outside of bankruptcy, if you never file, you know, the creditor is going to repo the car, and then they're going to sue you for that $20,000. So you can always surrender when you're underwater, and that is the economically sound decision. But if you want to keep their collateral because you like driving that truck or you like living in your house, you can reaffirm the debt. Reaffirmation is a bankruptcy contract. It's a standard bankruptcy boilerplate contract, which in basic layman's term just means you're going to keep paying the debt as if the bankruptcy never happened. So the creditor can't change the terms. He can't change the interest rate or any of that. You just keep on paying as if the bankruptcy never happened. The only difference is if you default post-bankruptcy, you've waived your discharge.
Oh, I was just going to tell James that we're probably coming up on a break here pretty soon. So when you get to a point where it's a nice break and...
Well, yeah, well, let me just finish with that. So you enter into a reaffirmation agreement saying you're going to keep paying on your car debt. Then post-bankruptcy, if you default, they can come get their collateral, and you've waived your discharge, meaning they can go ahead and sue you for that deficiency. But assuming you make all your payments, then you keep the vehicle. This might be a good time for a break, because I'm going to start talking about what is a discharge.
Okay, then with that, we will take you to the next break, and we'll see you when we come back here on Common Law.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church. As we read the Bible, it becomes very clear why Jesus Christ came into this world. One of the things that makes that clear are a number of passages of Scripture that explain to us why Jesus did not come. One such passage is Luke chapter 9, verse 56, where the Bible says, "For the Son of Man is not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them." John 3:16 and 17 states it this way, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. In essence, Jesus did not come to execute lawbreakers, sinners. He came to procure for them and provide to them pardon for their sins if they will in repentant faith turn to him. If you'd like to contact us here at Bonners Ferry Baptist Church, you can reach us at 267-3746 or find us at bfbaptist.com.
Jim and Sonny here. Come to Parker Subaru. We have the right car to fit your budget and get the customer service and attention you deserve.
Thanks, Jim. Yes, Parker Subaru has the right vehicle to meet your needs. From sedans like the Impreza, the longest lasting vehicle in its class, and the Legacy with the largest, most comfortable interior yet. Thinking of a crossover? We have the best at Parker Subaru. Choose from the fuel-efficient Crosstrek, the Forester loaded with safety and tech features beyond the competition, or the legendary Go Anywhere Outback. Or if you need a full-size SUV, check out the Ascent with plenty of ground clearance and 5,000 pounds towing capacity. Make sure your service and repairs are done to Subaru specification. At Parker Subaru, we have a full service department with fully certified technicians. We'll ensure the job is done quickly.
Come to Parker Subaru and get the award-winning attention you deserve. We're at Highway 95 in Dalton and Coeur d'Alene.
Jason, a COVID survivor from Twin Falls.
I honestly didn't take COVID seriously. I felt a mask wouldn't really protect me. Then I got sick. It completely knocked me out. I was out for weeks. My family was terrified. COVID isn't just a flu. COVID is no joke. Now I choose to wear a mask to protect myself and protect others. So hopefully other Idahoans don't have to experience what I did.
Learn more at one.idaho.gov.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
97.1 FM is North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back to Common Law, or as I would like to call it, Dead Friday. This show always happens on a Friday, so I think we need to talk to the sound people about changing my intro music to something more appropriate for Dead Friday. Anyway, happy Dead Friday, everybody. We're here in the studio with James McDonald, who is appropriately dressed in his Friday outfit, to talk about bankruptcy, and he stopped off talking about, or with the idea of reaffirming your debt, and then being able to keep your truck instead of having to lose it in a bankruptcy, and at that point, I will turn it back over to James again.
Thank you, Art. So, to me, really, like, what is the point for, you know, the average person here in Bonner County? Why do you want to file bankruptcy? It's because you want to get a discharge, get rid of all your legal obligations on your dischargeable debts. So at the end of the bankruptcy process, when the case is closed, you discharge your debt. So you can get rid of all of that credit card debt. Or a lot of times you see people, they come in, they have $50,000, $100,000 in medical debt. You know, it's an insurmountable sum. They're never going to be able to repay that based on the wages most people unfortunately make here in Bonner County. You know, you're just kind of on that little hamster wheel going around and you're never getting anywhere. You know, I think there's a lot of misinformation in the general population of bankruptcy and some sort of stigma. You know, you're not a bad person. It's just taking advantage of the law and giving you what you're supposed to get, a fresh start, so you can start over. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to move forward just because you had a medical incident and you didn't have proper insurance, or you lost your job and had to live on some credit cards, or at one point you made some more money and then now you lost your job. So that's the idea, is bankruptcy is to give you a fresh start, and that's what the discharge does. Now, earlier I was talking about unsecured debt, and that's really what bankruptcy is designed for. Get rid of that unsecured debt. Get rid of your credit card debt, your medical debt. Take away all that stress. And that's one of the reasons I like practicing bankruptcy. My clients, you know, most of them never want to come in and see me. They come way too late. You know, they only come to see me once they've been sued or, you know, their wages are about to be garnished, or they're about to have a foreclosure, and they wait and wait. Most people don't come in all cheery, hey, I want to file bankruptcy. That's not really the way it works. But there's certain unsecured debts that are, because of public policy reasons, are non-dischargeable. These debts are going to survive your bankruptcy in most instances in a Chapter 7. First off, we have your debts incurred by fraud. So if you defrauded a creditor, you're not going to be able to get rid of that debt, meaning you gave them bogus financial information and they relied on that bogus financial information to extend you credit. If they can prove that up, it will not be discharged. So the presumption is all debts are going to be discharged unless a creditor brings a lawsuit within the overriding bankruptcy case. It's called an adversary proceeding. They have to sue you in the bankruptcy and prove up why the debt should not be discharged. That's a fraud base. They have to prove fraud. So a lot of times, you know, I used to litigate those cases when I represented the Chapter 7 trustee. Thankfully, as a debtor's attorney, I've had very few of those cases where the Chapter 7 trustee or the U.S. trustee, which is the United States trustee, they're kind of like the bankruptcy cops. They oversee the whole system. They came after my client or an individual creditor. Another big class of unsecured debt that you're never going to get rid of in a bankruptcy is child support. And I think we all agree on that. You shouldn't be able to get rid of your child support by filing bankruptcy. So we have a whole laundry list in the bankruptcy codes of debts that are non-dischargeable. And I'll just run through some of the top ones. Child support's always going to survive. Taxes, generally you can't get rid of taxes in a bankruptcy. There is an exception to that. If your taxes are more than 3 years old from the time you filed, and you timely filed all your tax returns, but you just couldn't pay that liability. So it wasn't like you didn't file the taxes. You filed your return, you just couldn't pay the money. If you did that and they're over 3 years old, you could get rid of them in a bankruptcy. The problem I see for most of my clients is they just didn't timely file returns, and so those are never going to go away. But in general, your taxes, your debts to Uncle Sam, they're going to survive the bankruptcy. Also, if you have court-ordered fines, those aren't going away in a bankruptcy either. Those are going to survive the bankruptcy discharge, and you're still going to have to deal with those. Same with criminal restitution orders. You know, if you had a crime where you assaulted somebody, or maybe you ran into somebody drunk, something like that, those are going to also survive. You can't get rid of those, so that's not a good reason to file bankruptcy. And the final unsecured debt that I wanted to talk about a minute, and I think this is a big problem in our society and something that Congress really needs to look at, is student loans. Right now, student loans are presumed to be accepted from discharge, meaning they're going to survive the bankruptcy discharge and you're going to have to keep paying those. As I talked about earlier, you know, a creditor typically has to prove the debt is non-dischargeable if it's a fraud situation, meaning the creditor has to sue the debtor in the bankruptcy and prove that the debt should not be discharged. Student loans, just the opposite. The debtor would have to sue the student loan creditor, do an adversary proceeding, and prove up that the debt should be discharged because it's an undue hardship. But this is a really high bar for a debtor to get under the current case law. And I've actually, in my 16 years of practice, have never done an adversary trying to discharge student loans because I've never really had the right set of facts. I mean, basically, you need somebody that's older, disabled, and is never going to make any more money to be able to win one of those cases under the current case law. So generally, when I meet with clients and they come in, they have some student loans, I explain to them those are probably going to survive, and the best way to handle the student loans is to work with your student loans creditor and seeing if you can do a workout with them. A lot of times they have a lot of good deferment programs based on your income. So let me tell you about how the bankruptcy process works.
Let me ask you a quick question, James, because that's what I was talking with another guy named Pete Erblin, who you know.
Yep.
And we were discussing this idea of just forgiving all the student loan debt, you know, and, you know, notwithstanding my hardcore left-wing liberal, you know, progressive agenda, I have a problem with that. I mean, I think if you had good grades and you decided to go to some Ivy League school and spend a couple $100,000 to get a communications degree, well, that wasn't very smart. And why do you get off the hook for doing that? And Pete had the idea of making student loan debt dischargeable like any other debt. So if you qualify to get rid of it, you can get rid of it. If you're willing to hurt your credit to get rid of it, you can get rid of it. But we're not just going to write a blank check to all these people. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, the converse of that, Art, would be, I mean, you still have to file bankruptcy to be able to discharge it. And if it's a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you have to put all of your assets up. So if you have non-exempt assets, and I'm going to explain that in a little more detail here in a minute, those are going to be liquidated to pay your creditors. So you'd have to be a somebody that doesn't have a lot of non-exempt assets, or like I talked about earlier, when the means test, you can't be making a lot of money. So, I mean, if you have your Ivy League degree, you can't be having a good job and making $100,000 a year and then just dump your $500,000 of student loans. And sometimes they have partial discharges in some of these student loan cases where they'll forgive, say, the debtor, for instance, let's just say, has $100,000 in student loans. They bring an adversary, they do the whole trial, and the judge has the discretion to say, well, maybe you can't pay the whole $100,000 back based on your current financial situation, so we'll discharge $50,000 of it, and you still owe $50,000 out of the bankruptcy. But I just think as student loan debt has become such a big issue in our society that we somehow have to deal with it because we can't strap these young people. They come out of college and they have hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Then they're forced to take jobs just to make the most money they can, as opposed to maybe they wanted to do some sort of public service job that doesn't pay very well. Well, they don't have that option if they have $200,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point.
So before you interrupted me, Art, what I was going to say, I just want to talk about the procedure and how we do this. So when I have a client come in to meet me, we're going to have to create documents to do the bankruptcy. What's the nuts and bolts of it? So what we have to create for a client before we file a bankruptcy, we create a petition. That's your bankruptcy petition, which is just your biographical information. Then we have schedules. Your schedules is a list of everything you own, everybody you owe money to, all your creditors. You also have exemption schedules, which we handle as the attorney, exempting your assets. And then you have income and expense schedules and a statement of financial affairs, which is a check-the-box narrative of what's been going on in your financial life the last couple of years. So we have to create all those documents to file the bankruptcy case. The important part and your duty as a debtor is you have to disclose your assets. Failure to disclose assets creates a lot of problems. If the court, the trustee, the U.S. trustee finds out you're hiding assets, you won't get a discharge. So you've wasted all this time and money going through a bankruptcy, and then all of your debts are found to be non-dischargeable. In extreme situations, you can also, bankruptcy fraud, it's a crime. So if you're hiding boats or land and the system finds out about it, not only will you not get a discharge, but you will go spend some time in the federal Gray Bar Motel. So it's just really important that the debtor discloses all of their assets.
Real quick, James, before you move on, what I mainly come across when it comes to bankruptcies is when people come in to see me and they want to sue somebody for money. For usually it's a car wreck. And what I've come across a lot in my practice is they come in and they tell me they were injured and they want to sue, and we file a lawsuit. And then the very first thing we get from the defense counsel is an explanation that we're judicially stopped from saying we could have a lawsuit. Can you explain how that works? I mean, the idea that...
Yeah, this is a common problem is, so somebody files bankruptcy and they've been in some sort of accident, injury claim, maybe a mass tort, and they fail to tell their debtor's attorney about this lawsuit, which is an asset. A claim is an asset. So they don't disclose this asset in the bankruptcy case. It's not listed in the schedules. Then the case proceeds, the bankruptcy gets closed, and this debtor you're talking about, they didn't tell you, the personal injury, the plaintiff's lawyer, about their bankruptcy. And like you said, then you sue based on this accident claim, and the insurance defense attorney comes back, and like you said, judicially estopped, meaning you can't bring this lawsuit. Because you failed to list the asset in the bankruptcy, you are prohibited by law from bringing that claim post-bankruptcy.
So it's the idea that if you tell the bankruptcy court I don't have any other assets, then you're not allowed to tell a different court that I actually did have this other asset. That's that kind of how it works?
Yeah, I mean, the important thing is if a debtor has a good claim, a good lawsuit from an injury or whatnot, they need to disclose that, and then the debtor's attorney can exempt that claim. That's the exemptions I was going to talk about in a minute. We do have exemptions for injury claims to the extent reasonably necessary for the debtor's support. So you could list the claim. Somebody can challenge the exemption, but usually that's going to go through, and you might be able to continue that lawsuit. Okay. Or your case trustee, who is appointed in every case, he can take that lawsuit and prosecute it for the benefit of all of your creditors.
All right, and I think right there is probably a good place to break, and we can come back and talk about what assets you can protect from a bankruptcy. And I think also what you're talking about there a little bit is called abandonment, where the trustee, can't they do that also? Say, you can have this case, we don't want to pursue it, you can pursue it if you want.
Exactly. A trustee can abandon any asset if it's what he deems burdensome and of inconsequential value to the bankruptcy estate.
Okay. All right. And with that, we'll go to break, and we'll see you when we come back to wrap up this edition of Common Law.
At the Co-op, we get the farming, ranching, gardening, off-grid, do-it-yourself, and escape to the woods lifestyles. We understand farm animals, pets, honeybees, and wildlife. In our aisles, you will find housewares, clothing, animal health, hand and power tools, yard and garden supplies, plumbing and electrical products, and more. We can help you plant a garden. We can show you how to put in a fence, run a water line, establish a pasture, and catch the rain in barrels. We can show you what you will need to fasten a dealy bob to a whatchamadinget and hang up a doohickey. Our hardware selection is impressive. And when it gets cold outside, we can help you stay warm with wood stoves, energy logs and pellets, and propane options. So when it comes to propane, farm, home, and hardware, think Co-op Gas and Supply Company. We get this rural life like no one else. Come see us. The Co-op, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, 208-263-6820.
It's February, and love is in the air. And Coyote Tractors are the hottest love story in North Idaho. Stop by Jordan Sales and Service, the home of I Love My Tractor, and get love struck with your new Coyote Tractor. Right now, Jordan's has them sale priced during their Love of Your Life Coyote Tractor sale. Just like love, this sale won't last forever. So see them in February before it's gone. Coyote Tractors are the hottest love story in North Idaho. Jordan Sales and Service, home of I Love My Tractor in Post Falls at 3200 West Celtis Way.
Idaho politicians are locking our citizens out of the lawmaking process and handing wealthy, out-of-state special interests the keys. A bill being forced through the State House would make it almost impossible for everyday Idahoans to vote directly on important issues. Contact your state lawmakers today and tell them to protect our constitutional right to Idaho's citizen-led ballot initiative process. Use your voice now before they take it away.
Paid for by Idahoans for free and fair elections.
The Post Falls Gun Show, sponsored by the Lewis Clark Trader for the Inland Empire, is coming to the Greyhound Park and Event Center. The Post Falls Gun Show features hundreds of tables full of guns, antiques, Indian artifacts, collectibles, coins, knives, art, and old West items. Buy, sell, trade, or just browse around. Two big days, Saturday 9 to 6 and Sunday 9 to 3. Don't miss the new Post Falls Gun Show at the Greyhound Park and Event Center this weekend, sponsored by the Lewis Clark Trader.
What would you give for a child you loved to make their wish come true? To help them fight a critical illness? Just imagine what you'd do. You see, wishes are so powerful, and you can make them real. They can give a child back their childhood, even change the way they feel. Every single one of us can make the stars align, because when we come together, hope and joy will shine. Wishes need stars like you. Visit Make-A-Wish at wish.org.
Listen live anytime, anywhere with our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Hello, welcome back to our last segment of Common Law here on Friday. We have James McDonald in the studio with us talking about bankruptcy law. I want to thank James for taking up the entire hour. So now I have my next show prepared and I don't have to do anything for it.
You're welcome, Art. I could just talk about bankruptcy all day. I mean,
sound, I mean, it's riveting stuff.
It is riveting stuff.
If you're a nerd like me, it's pretty riveting.
Well, you know, like I said, I mean, you can really help people out, kind of get back some of their human dignity, not feel so bad about themselves, and get that fresh start. I always like to think of, you know, you're dusting yourself off, you know, and starting over again.
Yep. And before I let you get going on your next topic, can you reach an agreement with somebody that you can't file bankruptcy?
No.
Can't do that. So, like,
it's prohibited. You can't waive your ability to file. You'll see creditors try to sneak that in contracts, settlement agreements, but that's
just
unenforceable. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I'll let you continue.
No, everybody has the right to file bankruptcy. Well, like I should say, that's a good point, is you can only file Chapter 7 once every 8 years. So it's 8 years from filing date to filing date. So, I mean, you can't constantly file. It's got to be an 8-year period.
Okay.
So I just want to talk about kind of how it typically goes. Dates are really important in bankruptcy. So let's say we have this hypothetical bankruptcy and we're going to file it on March 10th. As soon as you file that case, as soon as I file the case, the petition, schedules, and other bankruptcy documents, a bunch of things happen automatically by operation of law. I like to tell my clients it's legal fiction. Nothing really changes, but everything changes. So the moment that case is filed, that moment in time, a bankruptcy estate is created. The bankruptcy estate is a separate legal entity than you, Art, the individual, your bankruptcy estate. It's composed of everything you have a legal or equitable, this is a Chapter 7, interest at that moment. So everything you own at that moment in time is part of your bankruptcy estate. In a Chapter 7, things you acquire after you file are not property of the estate, they're yours. So if 10 days after you file, I wanted to give you a Ferrari, that wouldn't be part of your bankruptcy estate. The only real exception to that is inheritance. If you get an inheritance within 180 days, that can be clawed back in by the trustee.
Didn't know that.
So I always use this metaphor with my clients. Your bankruptcy estate is, if you think of a giant black pot, a witch's cauldron, you threw all your stuff in there, that's your bankruptcy estate. At that same moment in time you file your case, a case trustee is appointed. Like my former partner, Ford Elsesser, he's a standing Chapter 7 case trustee. His job is to find non-exempt assets to pay creditors the proverbial pennies of dollar. My job as a debtor's attorney is to use the exemption schemes to metaphorically pull those assets out of the black pot. In the vast majority of my cases, they're what we call no-asset cases, meaning I can pull everything you own out of that pot. Everything is exempt. And creditors get zero. That's my goal. I want creditors to get no money. Now, if you have some non-exempt assets like a Ferrari or land in Tahiti, that's what's going to be sold to pay creditors the pennies on the dollars. So we use exemptions. Exemptions are things you can protect from your creditors up to a certain dollar limit. So, like I said earlier, bankruptcy is a weird animal in that supposedly federal law. But here in Idaho, we use Idaho exemptions. So we use the same exemption scheme in bankruptcy as you would use under state law. Other states, like our sister state Washington, they have a different, they can use their own state law exemptions or federal exemptions. In some states, you just can only use the federal exemptions. So some of the key exemptions you're going to use here in Idaho is, for instance, we have a homestead exemption that was recently just bumped up quite generously to $175,000. That means you can protect $175,000 of equity from the trustee. So let's say you had a house worth $300,000, you owed $150,000 on your mortgage, that's $150,000 of equity. So that asset just kind of passes through the bankruptcy, the trustee can't liquidate it. Whereas if you had a $300,000 home free and clear, the trustee is going to sell that house, pay you, the debtor, $175,000 for your exemption, and the remainder, minus cost of sale, would go to pay creditors. So obviously I wouldn't file in that situation. We have an automobile exemption up to $10,000, so you can protect $10,000 of equity from your trustee. Each debtor gets that. Household goods, you know, that's not really worth anything. Those are some of your best. The other best exemption you have is your retirement. Your IRA, your 401k, pensions, those are totally exempt, unlimited. So the sad thing is when I see somebody came into my office and they cashed out their 401k, and they still had to file bankruptcy because they could have kept that and still gotten a discharge. The other great thing, as soon as you file your case, you get an automatic stay. This is a bankruptcy injunction provided by the bankruptcy code that stops everything. It gives you a timeout, or what we say in bankruptcy lingo, a breathing spell. So this is a reason a lot of times people come to see me, is their wages are getting garnished and they can't afford to lose 25% of their paycheck because they're barely eking by as it is. So as soon as we file that case, garnishment stops. As soon as creditors are on notice, they can no longer try to collect on the debt. Everything has to take place in the bankruptcy court jurisdiction, under the bankruptcy court's umbrella. So that's a big reason we got to file quickly. It stops everything. Not only does it stop garnishments, it would stop a foreclosure. So unfortunately, you know, people wait, humans being the way they are, they procrastinate, and they wait till the last minute to call me up and they want to file to stop a foreclosure. Well, it takes a little time usually to get filed, so that can create some problems. Or, you know, they're just sick of getting harassed by the creditors. They're calling them day and night. They're threatening them. They're sending them nasty grams. All of that stops as soon as we file the case. So that's a big reason to file bankruptcy, is to get that breathing spell. So now we have filed your case, and then what happens next? You have a meeting of creditors. This is the one time a debtor, pre-COVID, actually had to go down to the federal bankruptcy court, the federal courthouse down in Coeur d'Alene, to do this meeting of creditors. It's a meeting, not a hearing, so you're not in front of a judge. You're in front of the case trustee. He runs these meetings. And you're not even actually in the courtroom. They have a special 341 meeting. But as a debtor's attorney, one of the benefits of COVID is we don't have to drive all the way down to Coeur d'Alene to do these meetings, and we're doing them all telephonically. So that's saving me a lot of time and my clients a lot of time. They don't have to drive down there. These meetings are where creditors can come and examine a debtor under oath about the truth and accuracy of their petitions and schedules. The reality is, in your basic consumer debtor, like most people here in Sandpoint, no creditors are coming. These meetings last 3 to 5 minutes. The case trustee, he runs them and he examines the debtor. Whoop. He examines the debtor under oath to make sure they've listed all their assets, they've listed all their creditors, and that's an important part too. Sometimes people come in and see me and they're like, oh, hey, I don't want to file bankruptcy on this creditor or that creditor. That's not the way bankruptcy works. You have to list every creditor. So it's just as important for a debtor to list all of his creditors as assets, because creditors all, like I said earlier, have to take a collective hit, or they collectively get a dividend if there is some non-exempt assets.
James, before you go on, can I ask you a quick question? On your example of, I have a $300,000 house with a $150,000 loan, and you say the house just kind of passes through. Does that mean then that the loan just kind of keeps on chugging along like it always has?
Yes, if you recall earlier when I was trying to distinguish between unsecured debt and secured debt, that's about that reaffirmation agreement. So it's really important, because the reality is most home creditors, they're not going to foreclose on you. Or if they foreclose, they're not going to come after you for a deficiency like auto loan creditors will. But it's important for the debtor to reaffirm that home loan, because it helps them rebuild their credit.
But don't they run the risk, though, if they just went ahead and said, fine, take the house in the bankruptcy, then they just get rid of the debt. But if they take it outside the bankruptcy and then they don't make the payment and then the bank forecloses, don't they then run the risk of a potential deficiency that they could have had discharged?
Yes. I mean, they could come after them. But like I said, I've never seen
It's not common.
No, because they've taken your house. They figure there's nothing left. Maybe if it was a private money mortgage, but the banks, those guys usually don't come after them.
So it always makes sense to get your equity out of your house.
If you have $150,000 of equity and you're about to lose your home, get your house listed with a realtor and sell that home, pay off the mortgage, and at least put some money in your pocket. So if you have that kind of equity, I mean, you really need to act before it gets foreclosed on.
Gotcha.
But so you do this 341 meeting, you are sworn in, they are making a record, and that's how the trustees or creditors can sort of quote-unquote nail a lying, misbehaving debtor. You know, when they lied about assets, and here's, you know, a fraudulent transfer. This is the big kind of fraud issue where somebody, you know, they know about bankruptcy and they have a boat or some sort of motor toy, and then they transfer it to Cousin Bubba for $5, and then they don't tell anybody of that transfer. And failure to do that causes a lot of problems in the bankruptcy process.
Well, I can hear our music. Again, thank you, James McDonald,
for
coming on down. And the good news is, folks, he's not even close to done with the outline of bankruptcy law. So I'll have another show to occupy my time. Thank you for listening to Common Law 7B here on KPST. Got it right this time.
Way to go, Mark.
We'll see you in a month. You all have a good weekend and happy Dead Friday.
K246CU, 1450KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400KSPT Sandpoint, and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
From ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Happening now.